Our second interview is on papilledema, the characteristic swelling of the optic disc, secondary to elevated intracranial pressure. Without treatment, papilledema can progress to total loss of vision. More importantly, if this sign is missed, the associated high intracranial pressure can damage the brain and even cause death. Many patients with papilledema first present to their optometrist, and although this is relatively rare, optometrists working in the community have a very important role in the early identification and correct management of the condition. In this interview, Adam Wannell from Bristol Eye Hospital asked Michael Johnson, a community optometrist practicing in Gloucestershire and at Bristol Eye Hospital, about papilledema and its diagnosis.
Michael, could you explain what papilledema is and what causes the condition?
Well, papilledema is swelling of the optic nerve secondary to raised intracranial pressure, which, as the name suggests, is high pressure inside the skull. Mm-hmm. The pathogenesis of papilledema is that raised intracranial pressure is transmitted through the optic nerve sheath and then holds up exoplasmic flow, and that's the movement of proteins and neurotransmitters along the length of nerves. And this interruption to exoplasmic flow causes the nerve to swell and fluid to accumulate between the nerves. So papilledema is a consequence of raised intracranial pressure. And raised intracranial pressure itself has many possible causes. Our heads are largely filled with brain tissue, supraspinal fluid and blood, and there isn't any spare space. So anything that causes either our brains, cerebral spinal fluid or blood to increase in volume can raise intracranial pressure. And this may lead to papilledema. A common cause of raised intracranial pressure is an intracranial space-occupying lesion, which is something in the head that takes up space, such as a brain tumour, a hemorrhage, or perhaps an abscess. Brain volume may increase due to cerebral edema from head trauma or encephalitis. The cerebrospinal fluid volume might increase due to excessive production of cerebrospinal fluid, perhaps due to a choroidal plexus tumour, or maybe reduced absorption of cerebrospinal fluid, possibly due to something like meningitis. The blood volume may increase due to obstructed venous outflow, and a possible cause of that is venous sinus thrombosis. There are also some cases where intracranial pressure is raised and we cannot find a cause, and this is known as idiopathic raised intracranial hypertension.
So how common is papilledema, and are some people more at risk than others?
Fortunately, papilledema is rare. I'm not aware of any robust epidemiological data, but my experience is that most community optometrists would perhaps expect to see one or two cases in their career. In terms of risk, papilledema is a feature of a number of diseases associated with raised intracranial pressure, and each of these have their own distinct risk profile. Taken as a whole, papilledema can occur in patients of any age or demographic. Although that said, an important cause of raised intracranial pressure is idiopathic intracranial hypertension, which is much more common in obese females of childbearing age.
As optometrists, how do we detect papilledema?
Well, papilledema is seen when we look at the fundus. The appearance of papilledema passes through a number of overlapping stages as the condition progresses, and it does so over a number of days, weeks, or perhaps even months, depending on the degree of raised intracranial pressure. The first signs of papilledema are often very subtle and can easily be missed. At this stage, a stereoscopic view using a slit lamp by a microscope and an Avault lens is essential to make the diagnosis. A red-free filter or a green filter can be helpful in picking up the very subtle nerve fibre layer changes. When looking at the disc with papilledema, you might notice that the margins are not very distinct. There could be a grey fuzziness at the poles of the disc, which represents nerve fibre layer edema, and this is typically seen first where the nerve fibre layer is thickest, so first at the top and bottom of the disc and then on the nasal side. And this is followed by elevation of the disc border, something that is most noticeable nasally. The capillaries on the surface of the disc become dilated, giving the disc a reddish hue. You may see small splinter hemorrhages and cotton wool spots on and immediately next to the disc. And then as the disc becomes more swollen, it develops a paler halo around it, and the whole disc can appear to enlarge. And then the blood vessels leaving the disc become obscured as the nerves swell around them. And then next to the disc, you might see circumferential little wrinkles called Patton's lines, and these are more commonly seen on the macular side of the disc. In advanced papilledema, the nerve is impressively elevated. There's a loss of the optic cup, and the disc can be surrounded by retinal hemorrhages and exudates.
So a good stereoscopic disc examination is essential, particularly on the early stages there, to pick out those subtle signs.
By definition, papilledema is a swelling of the optic disc. It thus demands an appreciation of its depth. So yes, a stereoscopic view is essential when there is any doubt as to the diagnosis of papilledema.
Are there any symptoms that the patient will present with or complain of, such as a problem with their vision?
It's of huge diagnostic importance when deciding between other causes of disc swelling that papilledema has remarkably little effect on vision. The non-visual symptoms are much more common, particularly headache. The headaches associated with raised intracranial pressure are classically intermittent, non-pulsatile. They might be focal or diffuse, and they tend to become more frequent and more severe with time. And these headaches are classically worse in the morning, and on physical manoeuvres, which are known to increase raised intracranial pressure, like bending, coughing and straining, and sometimes they're associated with nausea and vomiting, and more commonly in children. In reality, things aren't quite as clear-cut, and the clinical picture is a bit more variable. So just because somebody doesn't have a headache that fits the classic pattern of raised intracranial pressure, it doesn't mean that they do not have raised intracranial pressure. It doesn't exclude papilledema. But certainly, any new headaches in patients over 50 and those associated with focal neurological symptoms, things like weakness and numbness in the arms, or non-focal neurological symptoms that include memory problems or perhaps personality changes, or a worsening on Valsalva manoeuvres like coughing and straining, are far more worrisome and demand a higher level of concern and perhaps investigation. The visual symptoms of papilledema are largely absent until advanced disease, although some patients do notice episodes of dimming or greying out of their vision. And these typically last for a few seconds, or sometimes they can last a few minutes, and they may occur up to 20 or 30 times a day, and they probably represent transient ischemia. The blind spot may be enlarged on formal visual field testing, but it's very unlikely that patients would notice that themselves.
What about visual field testing? Does anything show up there?
Well, on formal visual field testing, you may notice that the blind spot becomes larger, and that represents swelling of the optic nerve and probably ischemia around it, although patients would tend not to notice that themselves. In chronic disease, when it's been there for a long time and there's extensive damage to the optic nerve and some atrophy, formal testing may notice peripheral constriction and glaucoma-type defects may develop.
So would you advocate patients presenting possibly non-specific headaches a good stereoscopic disc assessment?
Yes. I think any patients presenting with new headaches or headaches with worrisome features demand exclusion of papilledema, and that requires a stereoscopic evaluation of the optic nerve. Additionally, formal visual field testing in part to look for an enlarged blind spot, but also to exclude other causes of headache that may be associated with visual field loss.
And so are there any other conditions that can mimic papilledema?
Yes, there are a very large number of conditions that can be confused with papilledema, and sometimes trying to differentiate between them is very, very difficult. Sometimes it's impossible just on a direct examination. Anatomical variants that could be confused with papilledema include a small hypropic disc, tilted discs, glial abnormalities such as a Burgmeister's papillae, myelinated nerve fibres as the nerves leave the disc. Sometimes it can look like an edematous nerve fibre layer and can blur the disc margins. And optic nerve head drusen, which is sometimes particularly difficult to differentiate from papilledema because it affects both eyes, as does papilledema, and has a relatively little effect on vision, and its appearance can superficially look very, very similar.
So how would you suggest we try and differentiate, you know, from drusen with something obviously much more serious with papilledema?
The drusen themselves are visible, the sort of slightly raised bumps along on the disc surface. Other times they are buried and they cannot be directly seen. In contrast to papilledema, these discs with drusen, there's often loss of the optic cup, and also the elevation in these eyes is maximal centrally, whereas in papilledema, the elevation typically starts around the border, particularly the nasal border. Also in these eyes, where the disc sort of hits onto the retina, the margin is relatively distinct, whereas in papilledema, there's a fuzzy greyness of the nerve fibre layer at this point. Also in optic nerve drusen, there's typically no hemorrhages, and also there isn't an association with headaches. There are other tests that hospitals may use to differentiate the two, and that includes ultrasound and perhaps even fluorescein and angiography. Acquired causes of disc swelling that could be confused with papilledema are again numerous, and they include inflammatory papillitis, anterior ischemic optic neuropathy, central retinal vein occlusion, malignant hypertension, diabetic papillopathy, and perhaps compression of the optic nerve by tumours pressing on the nerve, something like optic nerve meningioma, or more rarely, infiltration of the optic nerve by tumours like leukaemia.
So Michael, what would you recommend if we did see a patient in practice with suspected or definite papilledema?
If a patient has papilledema, then owing to the possible seriousness of the cause, that person needs to be investigated as a matter of priority by an ophthalmologist who can then arrange further investigation and initiate treatment promptly.
Should that be same day referral or urgent?
If an optometrist is concerned a patient has papilledema, I think the most appropriate thing would be to telephone their local accident emergency department and ask how they would like to proceed. Ordinarily, these patients should be seen the same day.
What about spontaneous venous pulsation and the link with papilledema?
It's true that venous pulsation can be stopped when the intracranial pressure is very high. However, about 20% of people without papilledema do not have spontaneous pulsation, so its absence is no guarantee of papilledema being present. Some people believe that if spontaneous venous pulsation can be seen, it effectively rules out papilledema. However, this is not necessarily the case and certainly should not be relied upon. And this is because intracranial pressure fluctuates and it may just happen to be in the normal range at the time that the person's being examined, but could be rising to dangerous levels at other times.
And so once the patient gets to the hospital, what sort of investigations or treatment might be used?
Well, I think it's a good question because it's nice to be able to tell your patients what they could expect. Firstly, we would dilate the pupils and we would repeat assessment of the optic disc. Usually, based on this, we're able to decide whether someone has papilledema or not. If there's any doubt, particularly with regard to optic nerve drusen, we would often arrange for a B-scan ultrasound. This can help because it can pick up when the optic nerve is swollen, and also if there are any drusen, these tend to autofluoresce. Less commonly, an OCT may be used to pick up edema of the nerve fibre layer. If we feel that a patient has papilledema, then we would want to exclude a space-occupying lesion, and that would demand imaging of the brain using either a CT scan or, more likely, an MRI scan. And that would generally be arranged on the same day or certainly within a few days. We might also check their blood pressure and carry out some blood tests, in particular to exclude giant cell arteritis, infections, and also tumours. If imaging comes back negative, so no space-occupying lesion is found, then usually we would proceed to a lumbar puncture to measure the intracranial pressure directly. This is only done after a space-occupying lesion has been excluded because if there were a tumour inside the head, it would compress the brain, and if you suddenly removed a column of spinal fluid, the brain could herniate downwards and cause damage. In terms of the treatment that the patient would then receive, that would depend very much on the underlying cause that was found. And this could range from weight loss and diuretics in somebody with idiopathic radiant intracranial hypertension to urgent surgery if you found something more sinister.
Thanks, Adam and Michael. Details of further reading on this subject can be found in the usual places.